And welcome to Dakota Midday here on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Kara Hetland in today for Carl Gerke. Get your lawn and garden questions ready. Julie Hoffman of East River Nursery in Huron will join the program later this hour. You can email your questions to midday@sdpb.org. Joining me now is Todd Melby. He is a reporter, a radio producer, and a digital innovator. And he has a new documentary that is being released online today. It's an interactive documentary called Oil to Die For. Todd, thanks so much for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start and I'll have you explain what the documentary is about.
Yeah, sure. I first started reporting on the oil boom in 2012 in western North Dakota. I'm originally from Hettinger, North Dakota, and I did lots of radio stories, you know, dozens and dozens of radio stories about the oil boom. And as I was driving around the oil patch and reading newspapers, I just kept hearing about these men who were dying. And usually all I would hear would be the name of the guy that died, how old he was, and how he died. And then those stories would just kind of disappear. So when I had the opportunity to do a TV documentary, which also had funding for an interactive documentary, I decided to just dive into this topic because I wanted to know why these men were dying, how they were dying, and you know, I just thought these were stories that needed to be told.
Yeah, the why is always the most interesting part, right?
It is, as is the human story. And, you know, lots of people criticize the, you know, oil extraction and fracking. And when they do that, they tend to focus on the environmental damage. And they're certainly valid environmental criticisms, but not many people talk about the men who died. So what I do in this interactive documentary, and by interactive we mean it's, you know, it's a mix of audio and video and text, is really give people a chance to kind of dive into the material and learn about the tragic death of one young man, a 21-year-old man from Montana.
Right, Dustin Bergsing. And we kind of get to know Dustin before we find out why we're getting to know Dustin, right?
Yeah, we do. And that was intentional. But, you know, what I wanted to do in this format, as I think all reporters want to do, is, you know, to tell a story that people can relate to and a story that illustrates a bigger problem. So, you know, Dustin is very... he's very likable. I mean, he was 21 years old. He was engaged to be married. He'd just become a father. He took a job in North Dakota's oil fields just to support his family. He was working as a whale watcher near Mandaree, North Dakota. And it was late one January night. He was taking his tank readings. I mean, he had to climb up a catwalk and open up a giant oil tanker to kind of, you know, see where the fluid levels were. And he was overcome by a plume of noxious hydrocarbons, kind of, and it just, you know, it dissipated the oxygen around him, and he died. He died through no fault of his own.
Is he just one person who's died that way, or is this an ongoing problem that we're not hearing about?
At the time I first started reporting this, I thought he was just one person, but it turns out many men, at least four, have died this way in the Williston Basin, you know, the oil patch in North Dakota and Montana. There's a government agency that's part of the Centers for Disease Control. It's called NIOSH. There's a government acronym, but basically that agency kind of dives into workplace safety issues. And they found that he wasn't the only guy who died that way. There's definitely a problem in western North Dakota regarding flowback and regarding kind of the content of the natural gas that's kind of mixed in with the crude that kind of creates these super dangerous conditions.
And you had a source that helped you through this.
Exactly, yes. So in addition to Dustin, you know, being a person that I thought, you know, people would want to know more about, I got access to a document by a Marathon Oil whistleblower. There was an engineer who worked for Marathon Oil, and after Dustin's family sued Marathon Oil, the well site where Dustin worked was owned by Marathon Oil. They're a big oil company based in Houston, Texas. So I got access to a document from a Marathon Oil whistleblower who says that he warned the company that there were all kinds of things wrong about these kinds of wells, and the company should pay attention, and they should change how they do flowback. And he said that his warnings were ignored. He said that he wrote lots of emails warning about the safety problems, and he said that Marathon Oil actually flew a lawyer from Houston to North Dakota to tell him how to write emails, basically telling him how not to reveal any factual information in an email because lawyers could discover it.
Now, did Dustin do anything wrong? Should he have been wearing a mask or anything like that, some kind of protection?
He did not do anything wrong. At the time, and still today in the oil patch, you'll see truck drivers and rig workers and all kinds of people wearing something called H2S monitors. They monitor hydrogen sulfide content in the air, and so the monitor will go off if there's that deadly killer, which is odorless and colorless, like you can't really see it. But he wasn't wearing a respirator, and since then, I believe lots of companies are requiring respirators, and they're requiring people like Dustin to work in pairs. And there's been some changes. I'm not sure if it's industry wide because they're not mandated by the government, but these are recommendations of that federal government agency. So some things may have changed, but at the time, you know, the evidence seems to indicate that he did absolutely nothing wrong.
Now, you had some pretty startling statistics in this. On-job death rate is higher than any other state for the third year in a row in North Dakota?
Yeah. Before the oil boom, North Dakota was not the most dangerous place to work in America. But in the last 3 years, it's become the most dangerous place to work in America. I mean, it's more dangerous than any other place. And I think, you know, North Dakotan government officials would tell you, well, that's because, you know, we have dangerous jobs. And some of that's true. I mean, white-collar states, you know, tend to have low death rates for on the job because it's tough to kill yourself in an office. But there are other states that have lots of blue-collar jobs like North Dakota has, lots of ag jobs and lots of oil field jobs, and those states aren't as bad as North Dakota. You know, the rates are alarming. And not only that, North Dakota's oil field death rates are nearly seven times higher than oil fields elsewhere in the U.S.
Now, it's not just deaths, though. We're talking amputations, crushes, burns.
True.
Those kinds of injuries
the data
as well,
I was
right?
focused on was, mm-hmm. was folks who were dying
right.
in the oil fields,
right.
but definitely there have also been you know, cases of people getting injured super seriously as well.
Well, you start this online interactive documentary talking a lot about, you know, the ambulance and that this growth just happened and they're still not caught up to what's happening, like EMS and quick response and those kinds of things.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about small towns in western South Dakota or western North Dakota before the boom, you know, these are towns with all volunteer firefighters, all volunteer, you know, ambulance companies, and you know, they'd be people who would, you know, get together and do things for their town, but they weren't called upon that much. I mean, they might have, you know, a call a week or a couple of calls a month. But with the oil boom around Williston and Watford City and that whole area of western North Dakota, suddenly these volunteer ambulance companies and firefighting companies got lots of calls. And so we focus in on one ambulance company that, you know, had a big, big change and, you know, actually had to start hiring and paying EMTs.
I wrote down, as I was watching it, I was taking notes, and I just wrote down, crews aren't safe, it's scary. And I don't know if that was a direct quote or if that was my reaction to watching this last week.
Yeah, I believe that was a direct quote from the person in charge of the ambulance company in Kildare, North Dakota.
Uh-huh. And so are you seeing some changes happening or what is your hope with this documentary?
Well, my hope is that that people around the country and even around the world, because anyone can go to blackgoldboom.com and watch it, and they can watch it on their phone as well as their computer. It's designed to work with mobile phones, both Androids and Apples. My hope is that people just realize that this is a big problem, that that men are dying out here, and somebody should do something about it. And you know, these just aren't, you know, nameless, faceless victims. These are real people, you know, who have who have friends and who have you know, daughters and mothers and you know, people who really care about them. And it's just tragic that, you know, folks continue to die this way.
Now, let's go back and talk a little bit more about Destin, because you begin this with, you know, showing that, you know, he's a cowboy and on the rodeo circuit and meets a girl and falls in love. But then you end it with his best friend.
His best friend was Jason Bold, or certainly a very, very good friend. And I was struck by Jason because after Dustin died, Jason started up a bull ride in Laurel, Montana, to honor his friend and also to raise money for his fiance and his daughter. And that was appealing to me because it just showed how big of a heart he had and how important Dustin was in his life. And it was probably, you know, helped him grieve. And so I just found it, you know, emotionally, I guess, important.
You're tugging at our heartstrings here, Todd.
Well, these are, you know,
not that it's a bad thing.
You know, these are real people, and so I just wanted to try to communicate that.
Right. And could you have told many other similar stories with other people, or why did you just pick this one?
I definitely could have told other stories, and I chose one because it's easier for you know, the reader or the user, you know, or the person watching it to kind of relate to one person. So that's why, you know, as journalists, we tend to focus on one story. And this was a particularly powerful story. I mean, he was so young. I mean, he and you know, his girlfriend, who became his fiance, you know, they'd only known each other for less than a year. You know, when they met, they were like 2 hours away from each other. They moved in. You know, they had a baby. He took a job in the oil field. I mean, the story is just so, you know, so heartbreaking, really, that it was just appealing.
But kind of typical for the oil workers there, isn't it?
As far as
I need to make money. This is the place to go to make money. I'm going to support my family.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, when I first started out there in 2012, I mean, the country was still in a major, major recession. And I met people from all over the country who had lost their houses because of, you know, the Great Recession, or, you know, who were suffering, really, because they couldn't get a good paying job where they lived. So they came to North Dakota. And if you think about manufacturing jobs, blue-collar jobs, stagnant wages in America, you know, lots of those jobs have gone to other countries. And there's not a lot of really good-paying jobs in America for folks who don't have a college degree. And North Dakota was a place to go to make some good money and to support your family and to kind of, you know, get yourself back on your feet. So Dustin was like that in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And what happened with his mother sued the company?
Correct.
And what happened with that lawsuit?
Well, it was settled out of court for an undisclosed amount of money, as is typical in civil lawsuits. Mm-hmm. When they settle out of court, you know, there's a non-disclosure agreement that was signed. So we don't know how much money was paid by Marathon Oil to Dustin Bergsingh's family. The lawyer representing Bergsingh's family called it a significant amount of money, but we don't know how much money that was.
But it gave you access to some documents. And is this going to lead you down to other stories?
It could possibly. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I should say that Marathon Oil has refuted the testimony of the whistleblower. Mm-hmm. They disagree with his comments, and Marathon Oil's comments are included in the interactive as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you really, I mean, it's a fun way to spend some time in looking at this documentary, and I know I saw it before you were completely finished with it, but it's interactive. You scroll to read the text. There's some music. There are some, you know, some side stories, and you have access to click on some documents. It's
yeah, exactly. So people can read the document from OSHA. That's the condolence letter to mm-hmm. Dustin's family. They can read the court documents. They can check into the reports and studies by the government agency that, you know, delves into workplace safety. They can also listen to the words of Dustin's girlfriend. They can listen to the words of an actor reading the transcript from the Marathon Oil whistleblower. So there's a lot of ways people can experience it. They can dive in really deep to all this content, for lack of a better word, or they can watch the videos only, or you know, you can kind of take it as you want to.
Take it as you want to. And what else is going to come of this documentary? Do you have it produced to air on a television as well, or is just interactive the way to go?
Well, interactive is the way to go for this, mm-hmm. but there's also a public television documentary that I've completed that's airing in North Dakota tonight on Prairie Public, and then we'll be airing on stations around the country later on this year. I hope South Dakota Public TV picks it up. And that's called Black Gold Boom, and that focuses on the American Indian tribe, the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara folks in western North Dakota, and how they're grappling with the boom. So both of these projects kind of look at the opportunities and consequences of the oil boom.
Okay, and all of it, is it all online as well? Or
well, the TV documentary isn't, but there's you can watch a trailer for it online at blackgoldboom.com.
Okay, as well as this interactive documentary, Oil to Die For.
Correct.
At blackgoldboom.com. Awesome. Well, Todd Milby, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on Dakota Midday today and talking about your documentary.
Hey, thank you so much.
And we'll have a link to your webpage on our webpage at sdpb.org. Thank you so very much. And when we come back, we're going to talk about a new nonprofit being formed called Friends of the Big Sioux River. And don't forget to send in your garden questions as we'll talk about lawn and gardens as we have freeze warnings here in South Dakota today. You're listening to Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.